The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
I am sick to my stomach as we begin the show today. I am filled with rage. I've mentioned before that I used to joke, ironically, about having grown up on the mean streets of Ballard. But there's no irony anymore, because those streets have gotten so mean. And I wonder if our city council members, I'm trying to control my rage today. You can probably hear the shaking in my voice, because I certainly do. I want to know if Lisa Herbold and Bruce Harrell, if Kishama Sawant and Rob Johnson, Deborah Juarez, Sally Bagshaw, Teresa Mosqueda, Lorena Gonzalez, and Mike O'Brien. Mike O'Brien, this is your district there in Ballard. How do you look yourselves in the mirror? How in God's name, when you have embraced policies with the help of the new mayor, with the help of the previous mayors, when you have embraced policies designed for very specific reasons that I will get into, designed to attract as many homeless people from around the country, and not all homeless people are evil or criminals or violent rapists, but some of them are. And this is happening too often. From victim Kelly, who's become a friend of our show, who was brutally attacked in the bathroom at Golden Gardens last year. The University of Washington student who was raped in her apartment by a homeless man last year. And now what's happened this week in Ballard. And I'm going to get into the details of this police report. And it's all very disturbing stuff, but you have to hear it. Because the decisions that are made by our politicians have very real life consequences. And if you bring in thousands of homeless people from around the country, a small percentage of them are going to be so mentally gone, so criminally insane, that it does increase the risk to the people of this area. This is the story of a 40-year-old woman who went to a car dealership just to get her car serviced at about 7:15 on Monday morning. She's 40 years old, a white female, blonde hair, according to the police report. She arrived at the dealership to have some maintenance completed on her car. She went and got a cup of coffee, went back to the dealership, and there's a little auxiliary. They're doing some construction at this dealership. So they have a temporary ramp and bathrooms that the customers can use. And this woman had to go up to the bathroom while she was getting her car serviced. She went into the middle stall and locked the stall door behind her and sat down. Then she heard somebody enter the bathroom and probably didn't think anything of it. I don't think my daughters or my wife would think anything if a bathroom door opened when they were inside. But then she, according to the police report, the person who entered started banging on the stall door, trying to open her stall door. She was using her feet to try to keep the door shut. And that's when the suspect forced the door open, grabbed the victim by the throat, dragged her from the stall, took her pants off. Now, I'll get to the details of this in just a moment because, again, you need to hear what's going on in our city right now. The general manager, executive manager of that car dealership, her name is Jennifer. She joins us here on Cairo Radio. Jennifer, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
You bet.
I imagine that, and I'm not mentioning the dealership because this is no fault of yours, what's happening on the streets around here, but this must be not just a difficult week, but an incredibly traumatic week for you and all of your employees there.
Yeah, it's a It's been a very difficult week for us. This is our home away from home, and to have something like this happen is just awful and unnecessary. And I mean, at some point, something has to be done about our challenges here in Seattle.
Yeah, I agree with you. It sounds like two of your employees there, and I haven't gotten to this part of the police report, but this woman is in the bathroom. The homeless guy locked the door, locked himself in the bathroom with her. And as I understand it, Jennifer, one of your employees heard her screaming inside the bathroom. Can you tell me what went down after that?
She was late for her shuttle ride by us, and so the employee went looking for her and heard her eventually inside the bathroom, and they got the door open, and a few employees came to her aid, one tackling the gentleman, and they detained him until police arrived.
How did they, and so as I understand, he became distracted, the homeless guy, as he was attacking this woman, and tragically, according to the police report, he had penetrated her with his fingers and then with his genitals. But when your employee started knocking, he became distracted enough that she was able to unlock the door. Is that right?
You know, I don't know exactly how the door came unlocked, and I also can't comment just because it's under investigation.
I understand. And that is what is in the police report. And I can go through the police report after we talk. Your male employees who eventually intervened and detained this guy, how are they doing? Because I'm just imagining on a Monday morning, like you said, you show up at work. You can't begin to imagine that you are going to be thrust into the middle of this absolute nightmare at the beginning of your day, and the trauma for them must have been pretty extreme too, I would guess.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously they're quite shaken, and you know, people process things in different way, and especially trauma. Right now our focus is, you know, our thoughts are with the customer that was assaulted and with all of our employees, and in particular these individuals. A customer jumped in and helped as well. And so, you know, I'm incredibly proud that, you know, those are the kind of people that work for us. And I, you know, we're doing everything we can to give them any support that they need. We had a counselor out at the dealership yesterday available to talk to anyone. We just are talking about continued safety, different things we can do. You know, because this is an ongoing issue. This isn't a, you know, fix it once problem. Every day we have to have these conversations about, you know, hey, so and so is over here. You know, avoid that block, or we got to walk in pairs, or you know, it's a constant conversation. You're hyper aware, or you have to be, or else, you know, bad things happen.
I grew up in Ballard, Jennifer, and when I go into Ballard now, it's shocking to me because the change, I see it every few months. It's day to day for those of you who work there, but when you reflect back on what has happened in your neighborhood over the last several years, it has to be discouraging, infuriating. I mean, I can't even imagine the list of descriptives for what it's like to watch what is happening around us every single day here.
Yeah, all of the above. And I, too, have been in Ballard. I lived in Ballard for about 8 years, and then I've worked for this organization for 11 years. And I love Ballard, and it is infuriating. To say concerning isn't even a good way to put it. It's, you know, the challenges that our employees face every day and just trying to do their job and provide a great experience for our customer, and then, you know, us while, you know, we're at work. It's just, it increasingly is more and more difficult.
I'm looking at a picture of this guy from a Texas mugshot, this 24-year-old alleged rapist. He came up here from Texas, which is yet another sign that we are attracting some really negative forces from around the country here. Had you or any of your employees seen this guy before this alleged rape?
No.
Because no. I know that, you know, I've driven Leary Way, and I see the steady stream of RVs that they do nothing about. I see the violation notices on them. They're all weathered and faded because there's no follow-up in actually moving them along. But I know that particularly along Leary Way, there have been just an incredible number of problems, from the guy who was set on fire, who was on my show a few weeks ago, there have been murders there. Now we have this rape. Is this all an offshoot of the tolerance for these drug RVs in the neighborhood?
I'm certainly not an expert, but clearly that seems to be the case. We have to navigate around a lot of challenges here in Ballard. And, you know, the forefront of our mind is how do we do that safely without just keeping anyone's dignity. I certainly am not here to judge. I'm just saying that this is clearly a challenging issue, and it would just be so much better for everybody, the people that are patrons in Ballard and enjoy the history of Ballard and all the great places to explore. It just in all of Seattle. I mean,
It's not just a Seattle thing. I mean, it's the entire Puget Sound region. We're seeing it everywhere around here. So just to wrap this up, at the beginning of the conversation, I heard your emotion. I know that you care and feel deeply for your customer who this happened to. What's your message to the public officials who seem to me, with their vote a couple of days ago, to just be continuing on the same path that has gotten us to where we are now? What would your message be to public officials who are hearing about this crime today?
Well, I think anything, and a lot of incidences have happened recently in Ballard where, you know, a couple people were killed. You just talked about somebody that was caught on fire. There's, you know, assaults. At some point, this has to become a top priority of fixing this. And the challenges that these businesses and homeowners face in all of Puget Sound is incredibly challenging, and we are businesses that are doing great things in the community. We are contributing to our community and the livelihood, and our backs are against the wall, and something has to give. Something has to change.
I agree. Jennifer, I appreciate you talking with us. I know how difficult this week is for all of you there, but thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you.
Jennifer is the executive manager where this brutal rape happened. I'm going to talk about this a fair amount today. I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions for Seattle Police. This rape happened at 7 o'clock on Monday morning. This story did not appear in the police blotter on Monday. And I want to know if it was hidden before the vote to tax business for homeless drug addicts. I want to know if this story was buried so that nobody would hear about it before Lisa Herbold and Bruce Harrell and Kashama Sawant and Rob Johnson and Juarez and O'Brien and Bagshaw and Mosqueda and Gonzalez unanimously said, hey, let's continue down the same path. We're spending more than any city in the country. Let's spend even more. This guy came from Texas. Followed a 40-year-old woman into this bathroom stall, locked the door so she could be trapped inside with a monster. and he brutally raped her. Brutal. I mean, the description of this police report is infuriating. You wonder why I have such rage in my voice? I can't even read you some of the stuff that's in this police report. And I want to know, for the women on the council, do you think about the consequences of your policies? For the men on the council, do you think about your wives maybe confronting one of these monsters? This guy came from Texas. The rap we're hearing all the time is, oh, no, we got to raise all this money. It's to pay for your neighbors. No, it's not. No, it's not. The word's out. Seattle is the, or the whole region, is the path of least resistance for drug addicts. And sadly, a small percentage of those addicts are mentally, criminally insane. A small portion. But if you bring thousands, let's say it's 1%. That's 10 out of 1,000. You bring 5,000 from around the country, that's 50 people capable of this kind of crime coming into our region. And this isn't a theory. This is real life. This is Kelly at Golden Gardens, who had to battle her way out of a bathroom stall. Not today, mother bleeper, she shouted. She was able to fight her way out. Put a beat down on the guy that tried to attack her. Kelly's going to join us, by the way, live at 1:30 this afternoon. And we're going to find out for somebody who was able to fight her way out of a similar attack. That was a homeless guy, also in Ballard. U District, the UW student. Raped, homeless man. Are you thinking about that, council members, when you cast your vote? When you try to make this, hey, come on here to Seattle. You can shoot up heroin in front of the cops. They won't arrest you. We'll put a roof over your head. You can keep shooting up heroin and use meth and crack cocaine and drink yourself to death. And why? So that these council members, staffers, can go and register them to vote? And then on voting day, make sure you put the X next to Mike O'Brien. He'll keep taking money from the evil rich people and give it to you so you can shoot up heroin in your tiny house here. That's what this is about. It's pretty obvious that when you're already spending more money than any city in the country, and you go back and say, and now we got to spend even more. And 3% of this new money is going to go to drug treatment and mental health counseling? No, we got to build houses. We got to give them an address. If we give them an address, they can vote. This is absolutely nauseating what we have running this region right now. And I want to hear the statement by Jenny Durkin about this brutal rape in Ballard. I want to hear what Dow Constantine has to say. This happened here in King County, Dow. Jay Inslee, this is happening in Washington State. I want to hear from our politicians. You tell us all the time about how we got to vote more taxes for homeless people. Tell us about why we have to give more taxes if it brings a tiny percentage of the criminally insane into our region. Explain that to us. I'm going to give you more details on this. This is an important top story. It's consequential. It is reflective of what we've been trying to talk about for the last several months, but especially in the last couple of weeks as we continue down the same path. Lots more straight ahead on the Dory Monson Show. Lots of questions. Many more questions than answers right now. About why we're just finding out. We got some bare detail. I got some scant details of this rape yesterday afternoon. The police report just comes out today where it describes a homeless guy locking himself in a bathroom at a car dealership with a 40-year-old woman, 7:15 Monday morning. The vote on the head tax came down after my show on Monday. So, and the report was filed about 10:30 Monday morning. Never appeared in the police blotter before the vote. I'm getting a lot of feedback from you on the text messages here. A lot of people think that maybe there was an effort to keep this quiet so that they could continue their pursuit of the head tax for homeless people. From the 253, Dory, you know this story was hidden. There's no doubt in my mind the city council members are so wrapped up in their personal twisted views that they wouldn't think twice about keeping the story from interfering with their plan to pass the head tax. And then a lot of people are just moved, pure emotion, by this story. 425, Dory, I'm sitting in front of my radio crying. What has happened to our city? Thank you for being the voice to those of us who feel voiceless. The city has lost its mind. And that's the general response I'm getting from an awful lot of you. Our colleagues over at Cairo 7, they're also working this story actively. And reporter Amy Clancy joins us now live here on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, Amy, I appreciate you coming on with me today.
Anytime, Dory. Thanks for asking.
What have you been able to find out about this 24-year-old suspect?
Well, you know, Dory, I've been trying to get information about this guy since yesterday at about 9:45 a.m. because I saw his name on the jail roster. And not only did it include rape, but unlawful imprisonment and two counts of assault. And so, as you know, I read the jail roster every day. And whenever there's a sexual assault, I ask the King County Prosecutor's Office for the documents after probable cause has been found in court, so that I can find out what the details are. And unfortunately, you know, many times the rape is, you know, a family member, domestic violence, a child victim. And we don't report those because we don't want to further harm the victim. That's not our intention. But whenever it's a stranger on stranger rape, to me, that's news because it's something the public should know for public safety.
Sure.
So yesterday I asked the prosecutor's office multiple times for the documents on this suspect, 24-year-old Christopher Edward Teal, and I never got them. And the last time I asked was 5:45 last night. I sent another email, hey, do you have those documents yet? Because once a judge has determined that there's enough evidence to find probable cause, the judge then will set bail or let the suspect go. And once that happens, those documents are considered a matter of public record, and I should have access to them. But I didn't get them. So this morning, after we started hearing from people in the community about what they had been hearing about a rape at a car dealership in Ballard, I was on the treadmill and I again contacted the prosecutor's office and I said, could you please send me these documents? Because the details were the same and it appeared to be the same guy that I was trying to find information about. He's been arrested before, Dory. He apparently has been living in the Seattle area since at least 2016. He's originally from Texas, but since he came to Seattle, he's been homeless. In fact, he was arrested in August of 2016 for breaking into a Magnolia home where the occupant was gone and living there for weeks. And apparently when the homeowner came home, all of his belongings were gone. Now, since there was no evidence, according to the police report, to charge him with burglary, they just charged him with criminal trespass.
You're kidding.
And he was charged by Pete Holmes, our city attorney. But he didn't show up for a court appearance, so a warrant was issued for his arrest. That warrant was outstanding until Monday when he was arrested for rape. So all this time, over a year, he was in the wind with a warrant for his arrest on this burglary break-in issue. And it was finally cleared when he was arrested for rape.
So what would be a normal turnaround? Because this the police report that I was reading to my listeners, it was time-stamped 10:31 a.m. on Monday, which was 5 to 6 hours before the head tax vote. What would be a normal turnaround for this being, because it wasn't on the police blotter where these stories often pop up. What would be a normal turnaround for this to be in the public record?
Well, I don't know if I can accurately assess that. You know, sometimes we do stories that never do appear on the blotter. Sometimes stories appear on the blotter that we never knew about. So not every story, not every crime ends up on the blotter. So I don't know if there was any nefarious reasoning here or anything motivated by that. I don't know if it has anything to do with the head tax. But we've been told that, you know, the suspect was arrested and in custody. So at that point, is it still a personal safety issue? Is the public still at risk? Well, my argument would be if somebody has been living homeless for a couple of years and in his arrest where he broke into the Magnolia home, he was living with another guy who was also living there. You know, what's the status of him?
Well,
is he still breaking into homes? Has he been arrested?
And another issue, I haven't mentioned this yet, but the officer who wrote up the statement of probable cause quite clearly, Amy, wanted to make a statement because under last known address, they could have put not available, but the officer wrote 99999 Homeless Street, Seattle, Washington. So this is a cop who I'm guessing is so frustrated with how these officers who have to deal with these issues on the street, they are so frustrated that their hands being tied that this was a little statement of protest to write up last known address as Homeless Street.
And, you know, I don't know what his motivation was for writing that. I tweeted it and I posted it on my Facebook page because I, too, thought that was unusual. Oftentimes people who are homeless will give the address for the shelter through which they get services. The man who was arrested with Teal for living in that Magnolia home gave as an address the Ballard Food Bank. So different addresses can be given. Maybe that's the address that Teal, tongue-in-cheek, gave the officer when he asked him where he lived. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there is no 99999 Homeless Street.
Right, exactly. Well, and do we know, because I'm looking at a mugshot of this guy, and I don't know if it's from the Magnolia incident or from Texas. Do you know if he had a criminal history in Texas before moving up here?
That picture is from Texas, and I'm digging into that for our 7 o'clock news tonight. I'm not finding a whole heck of a lot. I do know that that was his most recent residence before he came here. I don't know why he came here. You know, we're trying to find all that stuff out. You know, it's not always easy to find those answers if it's a municipal court level issue versus a felony court level issue. But we're working on it. And we're hoping to have more answers for later.
Okay. And while you are chasing down the background of this guy, do you know if any of your colleagues or yourself? Are you going to talk to any members of the Seattle City Council or the mayor and see if we can get them to comment about this rape?
I know that Dee Dee Sun is right now reaching out to multiple people. She is going to be following this for our 5 o'clock news tonight. I know she's also reaching out to the Seattle Police Department. You know, this is one of the issues that I've raised many times before when it comes to criminals who are living homeless. I'm not talking about people who are down on their luck,
no,
who are homeless because they've lost a home, a job, whatever. I'm talking about criminals who are homeless. The problem is that it's easy to live under the radar. And so here's a guy who had a warrant for his arrest on a break-in and burglary issue in Magnolia. But how do you find somebody who has a warrant for their arrest if they're homeless?
Right.
If they're not reporting to anybody? If they're not providing their identification? And one of the things the Seattle Police Department has long told me it will not do when sweeping encampments or offering services to people is to check their names against outstanding warrants. And I've always asked, why will you not do that? And the Seattle Police Department said, because it's about offering services, not placing people under arrest. But my argument has always been and always will be, I'm not talking about arresting people who are not suspected or convicted of crime.
No, who have an active warrant.
I'm talking about people who have outstanding warrants.
Yeah.
This guy had an outstanding warrant.
Yeah, and was still able to access services. Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. All right, so our colleagues at Cairo 7, they'll have more at 5 and 7 o'clock. Amy, I always appreciate it. Thanks for coming on with me.
Thanks for asking, Dory. Have a good day.
Amy Clancy, Cairo 7 News. So this is a story where we have to hear from the council members. You have to explain. And like Amy said, and I'm not going to give this disclaimer too often, because I'm not going to just do the politically correct nonsense here. This guy is not an indictment of all homeless people, but it is an undeniable fact that the homeless population has a higher percentage of people with criminal behavior and has a higher percentage of people who are mentally ill. and who are capable of this sort of crime. And if you have policies that bring thousands of homeless people from around the country who are mentally ill and addicted into our region, it is going to bring a substantial number of people capable of this kind of crime. Maybe I'm done giving that disclaimer that this isn't an indictment of all homeless people, because anybody with half a brain knows that. But it is an indictment of a city council that has policies that attracts as many of these people from around the country, and that means you're going to be attracting a substantial number of people who are capable of doing this. Our coverage continues here on the Dory Monson Show. Maybe other things going on in the news. I'm going to get a lot of them in the fastest 15. The latest on the head tax. But I still want to know, did anybody in power, I mean, this is a police report written up at 10:30, so about 5 hours, 6 hours before the head tax vote. Did anyone in power know that a homeless guy had brutally raped a woman in a car dealership bathroom in Ballard? And was that kept out of the public consciousness between when the police report was written up and when the head tax vote was taken? Because, yes, I do believe that our city council members are that evil intended, that they are willing to put up with collateral damage of occasional rapes and murders in their pursuit of making this the capital in the United States of the kept homeless population. And what I mean by that is that's the reason they aren't mandating blood or drug testing when you get a roof over your head. They want to allow these people to kill themselves, but they can tell them along the way, between now and when they do kill themselves, they can tell them, hey, here's who to vote for. Remember, Michael Bryan took money from Amazon and gave it to you. You make sure you vote for Michael Bryan. And they are willing to put up with the collateral damage. I mean, look, there are active members of the city council, like Sally Bagshaw, who was willing to put up with child rape as she was trying to keep Ed Murray in office. And she, no doubt, had reached the same conclusion that most of the rest of us had, that that was the probability, that he was a child rapist. But party before honor, right? Right? Ed Murray's, he's an ally in the fight against the evil rich in Seattle. So, yeah, let's work behind the scenes. Let's try to keep an accused child rapist in office. You're telling me that when Sally Bagshaw, on record, in emails and text messages, was actively trying to secure enough support to keep an accused child rapist in the mayor's office, you're trying to tell me that she and her colleagues on the council aren't capable of not wanting a brutal rape to be part of the conversation as they are securing a head tax on the evil rich for the poor downtrodden of our region? I will keep going back to the fact that the guy who raped Kelly, who we're going to talk to, who escaped a brutal attack in the restroom at Golden Garden. She's going to join us at 1:30 this afternoon. That guy was from, where is he from, Arizona? The guy who attacked Kelly?
Yes,
he was from Arizona, came up here. This accused rapist in Ballard, here from Texas. The people who have the tent encampment by the Seattle Center. They're from back east. It is a huge migration. The word is out that Seattle, you won't get arrested for using. You can get a roof over your head and keep using. And what Amy Clancy just told us is unbelievable, that you can access services that the city provides and they won't check you for warrants first. They wouldn't, if this guy accessed, and that's the next question. Did this guy in this Ballard rape, did he access any of the public services that are available to the homeless. Was that part of the head tax debate? That before we give, you know, Amazon's riches to the vagrants and the drug addicts of the city, that we'll at least make sure they don't have any outstanding warrants? No, of course not. That wouldn't be nice. I got a lot more to get to throughout the afternoon. We'll hit some of the other news of the day. But this Ballard rape and what it means in the context with what has been the dominant story in our region the last several weeks remains front and center here on the Dory Monson Show.